three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast, recording this just a few, hours after Tasmania. Congratulations to the Jack Jumpers. They are the NBL 24 champions, and it was a great performance over five games, some games closer than others, but I think the entire final series was decided by 11 points. That was the sort of winning margins in total. That's incredible. They played great, so congratulations to them. But as I was saying, welcome to the program. It's just me today, Joseph. Andrew can't be here. Busy schedule for him over Easter. We're hoping to record something in the future to sort of put a bow on and round up this year, but we'll see how that happens, see how that goes. But we've each got very busy days and weeks after Easter, so we will... I just thought I'd get something up and out. That series was so good, it demanded an episode, and people I think are going to be interested in the NBL and those two teams and the way it went down and the way forward, that a podcast episode was necessary. What's going to happen in this episode? Just going to recap last episode we did with Boddy and our thoughts upon the series and how they played out, if they played out, and if they didn't, why they didn't or why they did. And then, just a little bit of a run through the series and game five itself, which was terrific. And then looking ahead, you know, as much as this season is, it's only just concluded, it's only been over for a couple of hours, but this is sports, this is basketball, this is the NBL. We move on, we look forward to next season, and we already look forward to it. So I've got here a list of who's under contract and who's not under contract for both sides, be it Melbourne and Tasmania. And we're going to go through that, and I'm going to go through that and give my thoughts on these two franchises moving forward. One, the very best, and one, just the second best, and there's no shame in that at all. So let's kick this off. So if I remember when I discussed it with Canyon, and I really can't remember Boddy's reply to this, but if you want to know what Boddy was thinking about this series, go to the Brad and Boddy podcast. I'm sure you'll get a more accurate picture of things. But certainly Canyon had predicted Tasmania to win this one, and I think I agreed with him at the time, although I didn't have anywhere near the conviction that Canyon had. His reasoning was the fact that Sam Froehlich in that previous series against Illawarra had so badly beat up on JLA that he thought the bigger and better bigs of Tasmania would do the same, if not worse or more. And that was the thing. That didn't actually happen. Well, it happened a little bit, but not really. JLA took a step back in games, certainly games 2 through 5. But I don't think anyone will be here saying that Magne or Lee, who missed a lot of the games in this series, were far and away the better big. So while we had the wrong rationale, we had the right idea. I think what I should have said was Roth's record in Melbourne is just so good that there was no way he wasn't walking away with this series. I reached out to John Casey on Twitter and said, I must be incorrect in my calculations that Roth now goes to 7 wins and 2 losses in Melbourne against United. And someone made a keen distinction on Twitter to say that, that's in Melbourne, not in Melbourne, but only against Melbourne United, because obviously there's other teams in that town. But he's Roth at John Cain Arena against Melbourne in the regular season only is 7 wins, 2 losses. How is this possible? How has this happened? This includes this series. I mean, he just wins in Melbourne against United, the strongest team with the strongest home court, and all talk of home cooking and the refs are terrible and all this and that. Well, certainly doesn't show up in this matchup. And the refs were great in this series. Absolutely terrific. They called it well. Slight departure there, but they called it well. And the idea of any sort of rigging or anything like that, I think it looks really, really silly. And even some criticisms look a bit silly. But here's Roth all time versus Vickerman. This is what I've got here. So this season he was 2-1 before the playoffs. Obviously now add 3 wins, take 2 losses. 2-1 the season before this season. 4-2 in 21-22. So that's a total of 10-6 all time, of which in Melbourne, 9 have been played there, and he's 7-2 all time against Vickerman. Does Dean Vickerman have egg on his face? Is this his? Has Roth just figured him out? You know, no one would be thinking that Roth over these years has had the much better roster and teams, and certainly not the history and the foundation and the infrastructure to get it done, but seemingly just does it. I think there is an element of Roth is maybe a step ahead of Vickerman on a lot of things, and we saw it especially in game 3 when the Jack Jumpers took the 2-1 series lead and could have wrapped it up in game 4 when went small and Vickerman was chasing his tail. You know, took out JLA when maybe could have forced the issue to get that short team, that small ball off the floor, but just couldn't keep JLA on the floor defensively, foul trouble wise, but also just confidence wise. That was a real series within a series, Vickerman and JLA and their relationship. You saw it played out pretty often and raw. But yeah, Roth just has Vickerman's number, and it's a great little back and forth. You don't really hear a lot about it. You know, you don't sort of see those two head to head, and you haven't seen the article yet where it's kind of like, you know, student becomes master, although it's never really been that relationship. It's more just like, you know, do we have a new league dad? My co-host Canyon calls Roth the league father, the league dad, and he's certainly daddy in Melbourne. So we'll see how that plays out. I want to talk about the Jack Jumpers' road to the championship, and it didn't just start this season. I think that a lot of people are surprised or are kind of saying, oh, a lot of people didn't have the Jack Jumpers winning at the start of the year. And I think that the only reason why they perhaps weren't picked at the start of the year, or certainly why they didn't have big championship heat coming into the finals, is simply the fact that, for me anyway, in the middle of the season when Milton Doyle had that family tragedy, had to depart, miss some games, and when he came back, certainly in that sort of 5-10 game stretch after coming back, just wasn't himself and dropped off, and this team looked very vulnerable in that time. They dropped in the standings, they dropped below Melbourne, obviously they dropped below Perth, so they kind of sat in that grey area for a while, but I think had that not happened, this team would have looked a lot stronger, and you would have said a lot more people saying, oh, JJ's are going to take it. But nonetheless, let's look at the JJ's road to the championship, because it really begins in their inaugural season in what was 2021-22. And, you know, the first step in the road to the championship was signing Scott Roth, plucked from the Wildcats, spent a year sort of forming that team. I remember he was there for the last Gleeson season, but not the first. Is it Morrison season when the Jack Jumpers weren't in the league? Kind of forgetting the timeline here, but he was signed long ago and had a good time to think about this team and get ingratiated with Tasmania. So that was their first masterstroke and getting who was probably the best coach. And in a way, the Jack Jumpers success with Roth is very much how this league's operated for a long time, which is when you can bring in Americans and make them a part of your culture and make them part of the country's culture. And I don't think Roth is naturalized, probably a PR, I'm not sure, or certainly by the end of his contract with the Jack Jumpers may be. He's signed a 3-year extension, I think it was. So, you know, it got back to that old marble foundation piece of this league, which is bring in great imports, sell them on the lifestyle. You can't match the money, but you can excel in the lifestyle and keep them around and make him a part of something. And, you know, to me, Roth is now a local, you know, as Tasmania as they come, and spoke so highly of the place and wasn't just looking to make his money and abscond like, say, a Mahmoud Abdul Fattah in Sydney. I don't think anyone would be lying if we thought that his style and his presence was ever really genuine. Chase Buford, you know, I had the impression he was a basketball Nepo baby. But, you know, showed real spirit and grit. Didn't work out, I think, by the sound of it, because he was kind of playing will they, won't they in negotiations, and the Kings being quite, their ownership being quite short, you know, made a hasty decision and probably the wrong one. But, you know, was he keen to hang around in Sydney for 10 years? I don't think so. Connor Henry, same question. Scott Morrison of Canada over in Perth. Like, did anyone get the impression that he was dying to put down roots? I don't think anyone would be saying that, but, you know, goes back to a linchpin of the league with Roth and what they've done with the JJs. And it's funny, in the same way that, you know, the Cal Bruton Wildcats of the 80s, late 80s, early 90s kind of stole the 36ers playbook, you saw this JJ's team initially steal that Wildcat playbook, and then in the last, this certainly this season and even last season, kind of make a few tweaks and changes to create their own identity. So I'm not saying they're a parody or a parrot by all means. They've got their own thing going on, but certainly in the early goings, looked at the most successful franchise and thought, how can we emulate their success? There's no shame in doing that at all. And you look at the players remaining from that inaugural team. You know, their best player was on their team when they first started, Jack McVay, certainly the best local. Steindl was on that team. Magnay was on that team. Krizlovic was on that team. Jared Weeks is still kind of on that team. I believe he's an assistant now. Jared Besto didn't play a lick in this series. I can't actually remember him at all season, but he was there. And then McDonald. So they brought in McVay, who was pretty much a self-starter from the beginning. Lit up pretty well. Steindl regressed as time went by. Magnay, they sat on forever as he went through injury after injury, basically didn't play for 2 years. Krizlovic kind of regressed, was a big player for them in their first season and didn't really feature in this series. And when he did, it was a bit spotty. Weeks retired, obviously. Besto didn't play, as I said. And then McDonald has become one of their rotation players. I think certainly top eight in minutes, maybe even their kind of sixth man, certainly in this series. So if you discount the Magnay Lee thing, but certainly in their top 7-8 minutes getters, this is not anything trivial in the NBL. This is really important. So they kept guys around. The other step further down the road in the road of the championship for the JJs was the fact of moving on from Majet. Tough call. It was a guy in his early 30s. This was kind of his last stop, Tasmania. Once they didn't have an offer for him, it was going to be difficult to relocate at his age and to tell a player like that, we're not keep bringing you back, even though he was such a big piece of it. That's not a difficult decision. Pardon me. That's not an easy discussion to have and an easy decision to make, but they made it. And they brought in Crawford, who wasn't the perfect choice. I don't think even after his huge game in game 5, 30-some plus points on good percentages, I still don't think anyone would be sitting here saying Crawford was the perfect piece for this team. But ultimately, the ball was falling to the 33, 34-year-old Majet too often late in the shot clock last season. They saw a problem, and they got a guy who, again, as I said, wasn't perfect, but addressed that primary concern. This is smart thinking. This is Occam razor thinking, and it's good by the Jack Jumpers. Also, they got Milton Doyle, who emerged as a star, and it's his sort of penetration and ball handling and distribution at size that made Majet dispensable. You could see it the year before where they were kind of your turn, my turn, and they just handed the keys right over to Doyle, and again, master stroke, great decision. Having said that, in this series, Doyle got clamped pretty badly by Dellavedova, was probably his primary defender. I hope I saw the game correctly. If I'm wrong about that and it was more Illy or more of a team effort, you let me know, but I'm quite certain it was often Dellavedova. And in the series, he got totally clamped by Dellavedova, but never lost his cool, never chased his shot. Still got his shot attempts between 10 and 15 where you want to see it, and didn't shoot great percentages, but never chased it like you see other players do, throw up bad shots to just get that number up. Never did it. And that's a measure of a real heady, silky player and a leader and a professional. So Doyle, he was terrific all year, other than that slump, as we mentioned. Again, the not losing is cool. This might sound like a trivial point. It's not. Then the other road to the championship is, this team in the offseason signs Drimmick and Deng. Majuk Deng and Anthony Drimmick. Deng averages 8 points per game, and then in that game 3, they go small, and game 4 really, but in game 3 scores, the near 20 points. I think he misses a shot from the field. I mean, no one saw it happening, but those two guys were kind of on the scrap heap. Drimmick in particular, who played huge minutes for this team, played big minutes last year, I want to say at Adelaide, around that 22 to 25 minute mark per game, but wasn't on anyone's radar as a game changer. And I think he started a lot of these games in the finals, and played admirable defense. Didn't quite get that stop on Dellavedova in game 4, but at the very end there. But, was a huge rotational piece for them and gave teams something to think about on offense and on defense. These are not easy signing decisions to make, and the Jack Jumpers did it. The next one was, the road to the championship. To win twice in Melbourne, although Roth's got this 7 wins, 2 losses record in Melbourne against United, to win twice in one series in Melbourne with the quote-unquote home cooking, the quote-unquote, you know, special crowd and all this and da-da-da-da and home court. And I even believed home court. And they just ran in the face of it. Lost at home and then win two on the road. I mean, this is not done. And then also, the JJs go to Perth. Perth were an underwhelming outfit, but still a challenge. Still have Bryce Cotton, the best in the league. And they win that deciding game in Perth as the undercard. Didn't have home court in either series and take it. This is phenomenal. This doesn't happen. Tell me the last time it's happened where a champion comes from the third seed and wins, you know, massive games on the road. Brilliant. But, you know, it comes down to what Dan Ewing told me ages ago. One of the secrets, Dan Ewing, fan of the show, I think, probably not anymore, who would be, but said ages ago that in NBL front offices, injuries and the thought process of either one, persisting through an injury, or two, you know, seeing one coming on a player and or is certainly on an import and making that cut, making that change, making that move. You know, the way injuries are navigated, not just in one season, but year to year, is a very, very key decision-making plot to winning something in the NBL. And, you know, the JJs persisted through Magne, who gave him amazing minutes throughout this series. Persisted through Steindl, who had a bad history, but they still brought him over, and, you know, a bunch of guys. And, you know, persisted through Doyle's stuff and off-court drama, which was terrible, but you know, that patience through injuries and patience through off-court stuff, they just never got rattled by it. A lot of teams, you know, get rattled by it. Southeast Melbourne, for example, just couldn't, you know, had imports that betrayed them and they had to go another way. So for me, they're the major stepping stones on the road to this championship, other than what we saw in the series, which we'll talk about more. Let's talk about Jack McVay comes away with finals MVP. Let's just really look at this guy's career in total. So it goes to Adelaide, bit player, not bad, whatever. In his last season with the 36ers in 2020-21, started only one game and averaged 19 minutes per game, which was eighth on that team. Which I actually thought he played a lot less minutes than that. I remember Canyon and I calling for him to play a lot more. But eighth in minutes on that team. Now, that sounds like a lot. And okay, he's in a major rotation. He played all the games, started one. He was a big part of it. But really, was he? That was the year they played 36 games. It was the COVID season, the NBL Cup thing. And what's funny is, as much as he got eight minutes per game, and, you know, 19 is not a bad number. It's about half a game. But the thing is, you know, that was a team that won 13 games and lost 23. So, you know, lost almost twice as many games as they won, and yet this guy could not get a starting gig, could not get any experimentation with his minutes. His shooting splits were great while he was in Adelaide. They basically run him out of town. Let's not kid ourselves. Connor Henry basically runs him out of town. First season with the JJs, they don't just want him there. They actively pursue him. I think he was their first player ever signed. Don't quote me on that, but, you know, or if not their first, one of, and they totally take him. And in his first season with the Jack Jumpers, starts every game, minutes jump to 26 minutes per game. Shooting splits remain almost identical from when he was at Adelaide. So improves as a player, but it wasn't just a case of gets more minutes, stats improve. It was an issue of he was always playing this well, but didn't quite have the role or the faith or the confidence from the staff, and gets it in Tasmania. You know, and that's what I was saying before. Connor Henry runs this guy out of town. And if you're a 36ers fan listening, this guy was on your roster and seemingly pretty happy there. Him and Drimmick and whatever else. This guy's contended in Tasmania, Adelaide, Tasmania, seemingly kind of similar sort of places. And he's not there. And, you know, this is what happens. You know, Connor Henry was a washout in Perth, went off, did some other good things overseas, presumably gets a second shot in the NBL. And, you know, now the 36ers, there's a bit of a bright future under Ninnis. They had a strong finish, but still a losing season, no playoffs. And this is what happens. The 36ers are feeling the effects and the symptoms of when an owner's primary hiring, when an owner's primary hiring criteria is servitude rather than aptitude. When their primary objective is to get someone who follows orders rather than someone who is really, really good at their job. Like a Scott Roth, for example, and a Dean Vickerman, for that matter. In fairness, that season, the focus was getting Giddey drafted, and they did so, probably higher than his station, as we've seen this season. But, you know, they did get him drafted, I think, in the top seven, something like that. And that was probably higher than he should have gone, which is fantastic. You know, so maybe that was just a tick of the season for them. But they've had a bit of a hangover ever since. Changing tact, we've talked about Jack McVay and the Jack Jumpers enough. Let's talk about Melbourne. Dellavedova had a series and had some final phases in fourth quarters that I don't think many people would defend, but I will. He was left on an island offensively. They were clearly wanting Dellavedova to force the action, and in a lot of the games did, and you know, made a huge shot at the end of whatever it was, game four. Or, you know, so had a great series. I've been a huge critic of Dellavedova's scoring ability, and I've called him overhyped, you know, but he was fantastic in this series. He, especially in game four, when McVay had hit that shot in Melbourne and they go back to Tasmania, and he carried that team to the win and clamped Doyle in every game, and, you know, was left on an island and made plays, big shots. You go through this whole series, the amount of times he'd hit a timely three-pointer or two in the last 5 minutes. I mean, this is not easy, and I was really impressed by him. A few deficiencies in the game, some shocking field goal attempts late in the play, but you know, someone's got to put the ball up, and you know, Travis wasn't exactly calling for it. Golding wanted it but couldn't get it. Clark didn't probably see enough of it, but I would love to look at the Dellavedova assist numbers. I didn't actually look at that. I more just looked at whatever. But yeah, to hold an NBL second teamer in Doyle to 19 of 57 in games 2 to 5, 33%. Yeah, I reward two-way players, and I think he was really good. I'll ask this question. Is it fair to put aside game 1 as an outlier? Because Melbourne kind of beat Tasmania by about 20 points. If you put that game 1 aside, which I don't know if it's fair or not fair to do that, but if you do, Melbourne were outscored in fourth quarters by 24 points across games 2 to 5. 22 to 14, 31 to 22. Then they outscored in the comeback, outscored Tasmania by 1 point, and then lost this fourth quarter by 6. Is that indication of a choke? I think anyone would be being disingenuous or exuberant if they were to say that Melbourne United choked away this series. I don't think that would be fair at all. Is it fair to say they were clumsy in fourth quarters? Yeah, probably pretty accurate. A bit meek in fourth quarters, some of the guys on the floor, for sure. Did Vickerman fail? Did he fail his team? I don't think so, but I will say, I don't know a neat way to say this other than, you know, one of Vickerman's failures. I think when he sits down and thinks about this series, one of the things he'll lament, that he'll reminisce about unfondly, that will plague him, is the fact that never quite restored JLA's confidence. Had that game one explosion and then games 2, 3, 4, 5, none of these were at JLA's level. Never quite restored that confidence. Never quite restored that foul restraint. Never could quite curtail his frustration. Now that's also on JLA himself, Joe Lewald-Chul, but you know, Roth was able to, there were sometimes Majuk Dean committed a foul in game 4 that was just so bad, I think in the first half, where he had 2 or 3 fouls, he reached in, he fouled the guy at the line, and Vickerman would go mental if that were on his team, and did at JLA on a couple of occasions when he created a defensive lapse, and the head went down, and I think that's something it's something I noticed. I don't know whether it's fair or not, but it's something I certainly noticed. Just was never could quite get him the ball for his best shots. Never could quite get the ball to the best player for the best shots, and what have you. So, your Golding-led field goal attempts for Melbourne twice in this series, but it never felt like that on the floor. I hate saying this sort of thing, like the numbers tell you one thing, but the eye test tells you something different. But as much as I say I hate that, I'm about to commit that exact offense. I just never felt like Golding had a couple of games late where I thought, I'm spectacular, but never was kind of always in the game as a looming, dangerous presence. And to be honest, it's kind of been an ongoing criticism of their duopoly, their relationship, their playing days. Golding kind of comes in and out of games. I mean, he's a shot maker and a game breaker, and I get that, but he's never the constant threat in the offense of just coming off two screens to catch. Sometimes he just seems to be standing and not a part of it. Maybe I'm going crazy, just the way I saw it. So that's it. And well, I've lost my place here, but yeah, Golding led field goal attempts for Melbourne twice in the series, but never by a big margin. And in the other three games, it was Dellavedova twice and JLA once. And when Dellavedova's your leaving field goal attempter, you know, he shouldn't just be a passing post out there, but when he's your number one guy from the field, you know, you're probably going to lose the series, as they did. But to having said all that, they played hard. You just cannot question the heart of this team. They played hard. They played well. You know, these games were decided by so little, and it was a flip of the coin in some. And, you know, if Jack McVay doesn't hit the most freakish quarter-court shot in the world, it was a bad shot. It was a low-percentage shot. It was a heave. It was crap. It was garbage. It was a hog shot. It was atrocious. But when it goes down, it's 100%. And that's it. But if he'd missed that, I mean, he would have got eaten alive by critics, and rightfully so, but he makes it. But Melbourne played hard. They played well. Vickerman had the defense humming, you know, to hold Milton Doyle, whether it's just, you know, Dellavedova, you got him, clamp him. But still, everyone kind of played their part. Some of these games were in the mud. They kept Jack Jumpers to pretty low score lines. Even in this game, it was in the 80s, some were in the 70s. You know, they were humming. And, you know, maybe going forward, that the offensive creativity has to come from some of the many assistants that sit there. And I've never really known what an assistant coach does other than sort of communicate fouls, but I'm sure they do a lot. The assistant coaches are probably bristling when I say this, but you know, that might be the way forward. They've got They've got Vickerman under contract for a long time. Is it a time to look at who else they can change to supplement that team and bring them something different? Just a thought for their executive of the year. Let's look forward. We've looked back. That was the championship. Great, cool. The road to next year's championship starts, I would say today, but I'm not sure when I'm publishing this. So it started immediately the moment that bell rang on the championship. So looking forward for Melbourne, the second best team in the NBL. Here's who's under contract. Vickerman's under contract to 27-28. So it'll be the 24-25 season next season. He's got next year and then three on top of that. So Vickerman's not going anywhere, so if any players don't like playing under him, they won't be there, because he will. Travers is under contract. Dellavedova's under contract. Krebs, Cameron, Golding, Illy, and Bowen. I think it's important here. Two guys under contract. Dellavedova will be 33 and turning 34 next season. Golding will be 35, turning 36. These are not scary ages. They're up there. But, you know, there's something to monitor and note from two big starting minute getters, but, you know, ages are ages, are what they are. Out of contract, this is where it gets interesting. So this is where we have some wiggle room, and I'll give the thumbs up, thumbs down as to what I'd do. JLA is out of contract with a player option. I would imagine he's now 29, turning 30 next season. This is when you kind of lock in your last big deal that takes you through to the years where it gets a bit dicey and teams want to kick your tires a bit more. So what's he going to do? I'd imagine he's going to delay taking that player option. I would have thought he will field other options. Can he get bigger money from elsewhere? You know, Perth kind of spent the bundle on Pinder. I think if they could have had their time again, they might have waited for JLA to come out of this contract. I don't know what the money is that brought JLA back from China to Melbourne. It's probably a lot. I mean, you look at this team, they only had the one import. Probably getting delivered over about 700k, Golding something similar, that sort of half mil mark, a bit more I would have thought. So JLA is probably commanding that kind of money already on your books. That's, you know, let's call it 1.5 million to 2 mil tied up in three players, three locals. Then Travers, you know, he's going to want a couple hundred grand. You're already at that 2 million mark. Shit, you're already over the salary cap. You're over the salary floor. Then you're looking at the cap and the spend and the tax. Gets a bit plucky if a team wants to throw some money at Joe Lualua and make him their corner piece and their top local. You know, Melbourne have a glut of locals. A Travers, a Dellavedova, a Golding, an Illy, a JLA. These are all potentially a 1-2 local on a lot of other teams. You know, who's Perth's best local at the minute? It's not Cotton. Would be, obviously. You know, their best local was, you know, Hiram Harris and a Wagstaff or Ty Webster, you know. These are not Shaley. These are not Travers. These are not Golding. You know, they have a glut of really good locals. But I digress. Let's go back to out of contract. So JLA is out of contract, player option. If I'm JLA, I'm exploring that player option. If I'm Melbourne United, I'm hoping he takes it, whatever the amount. It seemed to be agreeable this season. Newley's retired. And a quick word on Brad Newley. Great career, you know, funky NBL career where he comes back to Australia late in his career, having played great in Europe. You know, great story, you know, by all accounts, great teammate, great player, brought a lot to the NBL. Retires having played in the finals, I think, you know. He won plenty at Sydney, so he's probably okay with things. Or shit, was he there when they won? Yeah, I think so. Can't remember. So, you know, got his taste of everything, I hope. You know, and it just, you know, these are sports. It just doesn't break your way. You want to go out on top? You go out on second best. I don't know what to tell you. Huck Porty departs. Who knows what they're going to do with him? He'll probably field options elsewhere. Probably a young guy. Probably want to explore how he'd play overseas. Not that he's not already overseas, technically, for him. But he comes off that next star deal. But obviously, he got hurt. So I don't know what that contract is. Ian Clark comes out of contract. Great player. Will be 33 or 34 years old next season. Again, I'm just the same age as Dellavedova. Still a great player. Still got plenty left. But yeah, does this team need some diamondism, some explosiveness? Just a thought. But if I had the ability to go thumbs up and this guy's back, I'd say yeah, definitely bring back Clark. It seemed happy coming off the bench, which I think is important with a locally stacked team like this. And then Huck Porty, if he's open to it, yeah, bring him back too. He was a really nice piece off the bench and gave big minutes in game 5. Looked a bit shaky as a young guy out there. Missed free throws, fouling, a couple of bad hands when he'd check in the game. I think that's always been the knock on him, but the body's there, the athleticism's there, really good player. Looking forward for, so that's Melbourne, you know, and I think the future's still bright there. They need an injection of a bit of youth. They've got Travers, but in their, you know, top 8 players, it's really only Travers and Illy and JLA that are within that thing, so they needed a little bit. But actually, even though I say that, they've got a bright future. They'll be all right. Looking forward for Tasmania, here's who's under contract. Roth is under contract till the 26-27 season, so they got him hanging around, which is great. Here's the amazing thing for Tasmania. They've just won it, and already they've got Magne coming back, basically a starter. McVeigh coming back, their best local. Steindl coming back. You know, consistency, good player, was kind of getting on now and a little bit hurt, but is coming back for what it's worth. Krizlovic has dropped out of the rotation a lot, but is still a capable, you know, minute getter, especially if there's injuries. Milton Doyle, their best import and one of the top, I would say, well, he was an NBL second teamer, so he's definitely top 10, but he's definitely a top 5 player in this league. Didn't quite have the year to substantiate with an NBL first team, but is a top 5 player, and he's coming back. And then McDonald is coming back. Guy played huge minutes for him, had some big games, big scores. He comes back, a guy they've cultivated from their inaugural season, you know. So you look at that and you've got 1, 2, 3, 4 guys in your top 6 players coming back. It's pretty handy for an NBL franchise. You don't often get that luxury. Out of contract, you've got Bairstow. You know, they obviously see a value in him off the floor, but if I'm being curt and talking about, you know, I'm a big believer in put the money and see it on the floor in your players. I'd probably say to Bairstow, thank you for being, you know, an inaugural part, and you've got this championship and this is the swan song, you know, handshake and thank you very much. But as far as being a playing piece, I'd probably say no. Drimmick comes out of contract. Really tough. Haven't got his age with me. Doesn't really matter. Had a good year. You'd have to look around. A lot of guys are out of contract this year, and if you can upgrade at that spot, it's rather callous to do that to a big minute getter on a finals team. But there's a point where if you can get someone like, say, oh, you know, Galloway, who in Sydney, although he's gone to the NBA, but if you can get just that little bit more explosiveness and a little bit more consistency offensively, you'd probably look to upgrade there. Brutal, but gotta say it. Majuk Deng had a great season. Had a great couple of games in the finals, but didn't have a great season. You know, very much a one-way player. Defense has always been an issue. But gee, makes big shots and whew, like can score in the post and that. So I'd be looking at him at very much dependent upon price, but looking to maybe go thumbs up, bring him back. Marcus Lee, really big question mark. I mean, they won without him, right? gets hurt in game four, doesn't play game five. They win without him in one of those games anyway. It's all a question of how healthy is Magne, how trustworthy is Magne, and can you cheap out and you know, toughy, you know, real toughy that one. But I'd be leaning towards perhaps not. But did bring roster stability, but I just think Magne is set to be healthier and stronger, and fingers crossed. Then the other one is Crawford. I mean, talk about big game player. 30-some points, big percentages, huge looks in a big game, coming off nothing. You know, had a bad series and was really, you know, dragged, plucked out of games and sat on the bench for 8-10 you know, quarters at a time, and sometimes in fourth quarters when the game was on the line. That's tough for a player to be pulled out and said, hey, you know, you're our import, you've been our starter all year, big scorer all through the year, and you're going to sit and watch the fourth quarter as the big boys handle it. To keep the head up and drop 30 despite that, really remarkable. So that's Crawford, fantastic. I'd say bring him back, depending on what you're doing with Lee. If you think you can get something out of Magnan, if you think you can get another big to produce those Lee minutes, like who am I thinking? Someone like a Huck Porty or a Next Star who can give you something, or thinking over, you know, Hyrum Harris, or if you want some size at that spot, someone like, you know, Harrison, if he wanted to move on from Brisbane, although he had a really good year, he's probably going to be a toppy contract. But yeah, a lot of guys are out of contract, so maybe you can pilfer someone like that. We'll see. But Crawford, yeah, you'd probably look to... Boy, he was dynamic scorer. Probably look to bring him back. Oh, pardon me. Putting aside those two teams, and congratulations to Tasmania, and yeah, also congratulations to Melbourne, another big year for them. The big question is this: putting aside the tribalism of teams and players and all that sort of stuff, the big question, and this podcast and Andrew and I, we've flagged it from the very beginning of the year. The question is, has the NBL done enough to win or earn a better media rights deal than the one that is now expired? This deal with Foxtel, News Corp, and ESPN is over. It's done. 3 years elapsed. No more. What's best for the NBL? What's best for News Corp? What's best for ESPN and Foxtel, you know, quote unquote? You know, it begs the question. There's never been a better time to be, sorry, a worse time. Not better, a worse time. There's never been a worse time to be renegotiating a TV rights deal in Australia. The advertising market is in the toilet. So many companies have seen a massive drop in revenue. Secondly, the betting dollar for the NBL is in flux because there's a whole bunch of talk about betting companies being restricted in their advertising, certainly on television and a few other things, perhaps even in general on sports. Probably unlikely to happen, but still, where there's questions, where there's stress, where there's anxiety, where there's uncertainty, there's less money. And it affects the TV rights deal. But then you add into the equation more and more cord cutting. More and more people are not subscribing to Foxtel. Foxtel has released this thing called Huddle, which is where it's basically given into the streamers, and it's hoping to be able to be this one-stop shop for Foxtel and then all these things together. I actually don't know quite how it works. You bundle all your streamings together, and through Huddle you can kind of navigate through all of them, but somehow Foxtel and News Corp have some way of extracting some cash out of it. All seems incredibly flimsy to me. I mean, why these streaming services have worked really well with direct-to-consumer performance, where if you want Netflix, you just go to netflix.com and subscribe, and your television, most Android TVs seem to just have it linked, and you can download the app or whatever. So and then you just add in the fact that, you know, what is the NBL's ambition? Larry might go, Kesselman, I might go, owner of the league might go, he's got enough money in his pocket, does he really need an extra 40 mil over 3 years? Like, I think that was the deal last time, I really can't recall. You know, and is it 40 million? Is that actual cash, or is part of it sort of equated as the the infrastructure you're receiving as part of working with these people. You never know. They lie all the time. But, you know, just catch them and go, well, we're not growing behind a paywall. You know, it's very difficult to grow behind a paywall. Only 1.3 million Australians have KO. That's not good. That's 1/30th. That's one in every 30 people have access to the NBL. Are you going to grow on there? Are you confident that ESPN's going to grow your product? You know, especially when it's, and I quite like the idea of the home of hoops, but you're going to put the NBL right next to or right after the NBA. You're going to go from Kevin Durant to Shaley, you know? You're going to go from, I'm trying to get someone with the same first and last name. You're going to go from, who's got the same first and last name? You're going to go from, you know, there's no one called LeBron in the NBL, which makes this different. You're going to go from, Joe Mazzulla to Joe Lualachul. Doesn't really work. But you know what I mean? You're going to put them one against the other. Is that the best way to do it? Or you're better to frame the NBL as kind of the tribalism and put it up with like the BBL where it's a hit? I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. But you know what I mean? Do you trust them to grow your product? Do you trust News Corp? I only have access to sort of their podcast divisions, but you know, they've done podcasts on the basketball that have received, you know, 150 downloads. If you didn't know, that's really, really poor. So do you trust them to grow your product? So, you know, what's best? NBL betting, I would imagine, is very, very small. So do you think, well, maybe if we sign some deal with some funky streamer in China and we get a whole bunch of bettors there? I don't know. I don't know what the future is, but I have my doubts about, you know, what is essentially old media and Foxtel. I've seen the decisions they make, and I've seen the people that are behind some of the decision making, and you know, I'll reserve judgment. But I think you can tell by my tone what I think. But I'll go back to that initial question: has the NBL, have the players on the court, have the teams done enough, and the owners said done enough to go, the players are great, the teams are stable, the league is financially viable. If you invest with us, if you advertise with us, it will be a great idea for you and your product, and you're going to have a fun time. Are they capable of doing that? I put out a tweet earlier today. You need genuine brokers. You need genuine brokers and supporters of your league, not just saccharine self-promotion, which is sometimes what the NBL can fall into. This conversation has really changed tone to something negative, but when you just kind of, when you're not honest about your product and how you're going to turn $1 into $2, and you just keep pumping the same shit about, you know, oh, it's up and up, up and up, it's coming, it's up and coming. All right, where was it? Where's it going? Oh, it was where it was, and it's gone where it's going. So, yep, give me raw numbers to show me how you're going to turn $1 to. Okay, your numbers weren't great that day. Why? How can they improve? How can we improve them? What do you want from us? If you don't have people who can't articulate that, you're going nowhere. You're going to continue to be behind a paywall and play to the Three Rivers crowd. And that's the worst part. Get great attendance records. You know, 40 sellouts across the season. If you need this sort of stuff, go to John Casey. His Twitter account is great for it. But sellouts across the season, people are, you know, voting with their feet. But if you got people selling your product that you can't trust because you're like, I think this guy's telling me porky pies, let's go and give 200 million over 5 years to the A-League. Yeah, that was the irony and the painful thing of it all was this final series was fantastic, highly entertaining, best product, sports product coming out of Australia in the last couple of days and weeks. And despite a FIBA break totally killing its momentum, it was a great product. And there it was that at the same time as the game five, the decider of the NBL and Melbourne, big town versus Tasmania, small town, here we go. On the telly on Channel 10, on 10 Bold, because it's been relegated off the main channel, the A-League. There it was, the A-League. Melbourne victory versus, or Melbourne City versus Perth, I want to say. You know, just I believe they're only in their regular season. It's hard to tell. I don't follow it. Yeah, this is not good. This is not nice. This is not what you want. But they're stuck on that deal. 200 million over 5 years. I'll take it. The other thing to note in this conversation is the fact that we, the viewing public, maybe I'll try and find out in another way, but we, the public, won't actually know how well or poorly these NBL finals performed on TV, unlike years past. In the past, you've been able to go to sort of mediaweek.com.au or TV Black Box and just click on ratings, and there it has, alongside with 7, 9, 10's ratings, so you know, how well Maths does, or I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here on Channel 10. Alongside them, it would always have the Foxtel ratings and the Foxtel performances. But we won't know how well these NBL finals have done on TV, on Foxtel, because Foxtel have taken their ratings off of OZTAM, O-Z-T-A-M, which is traditionally the measuring unit for TV ratings in this country. Has been for a long time. I believe it's jointly owned by 7, 9, and 10, and ABC, SBS, or whatever. But it's been used forever. And Foxtel, following on from quite a vicious article put out, which I think was even put out by, you know, Foxtel, one of its affiliates, you know, one of its News Corp affiliates, they're all the one thing, criticizing itself, or maybe it was put out by a rival paper, I really can't recall. But essentially, the article criticized Foxtel, saying, you know, Foxtel, please explain. And if you're playing at home, you can Google this. Foxtel, please explain about TV ratings, where they had found that Foxtel was greatly exaggerating its ratings, especially on live sport. Greatly, greatly, greatly exaggerating, in particular the NRL. If you know Fox Sports, and Fox is headquartered in Sydney. And so NRL is a big player, and it's, you know, huge. Melbourne is the headquarters for AFL stuff, Sydney NRL. And so the numbers were greatly exaggerated. And there was sort of a please explain issued by kind of some advertisers, also just the sort of governing body and a few other people saying, okay, Foxtel, these numbers are interesting. We don't think they're entirely accurate. How are you coming to these numbers? And Foxtel basically just said, like, oh, no, they're accurate, but we're not going to show you how we arrived at our numbers. How we arrived at our TV ratings, saying, I mean, they could have gone to a fucking Oracle. God knows what they've done to get them. And they were saying that these numbers are greatly, greatly exaggerated. Now, all of a sudden, Foxtel has come out, taken its recordings off of OzTAM, which are public, and put them in the hands now of a company called Kantar, K for KitKat, A-N-T-A-R. And they have handed them over to them, and they're a private marketing firm that will only really... that will essentially skew the numbers, or not skew the numbers, that seems to me I'm faking them, but we'll kind of paraphrase the numbers or say, you know, just keep them under lock and key and position them as a talking point, market them essentially, and the numbers will really only be available to clients of that marketing giant. So it just shows, you know, so Foxtel now becomes, you know, keeping its numbers private. You know, what does that say when a company has to be private about its figures, especially when it's never been that way? The industry has never operated on, you know, private TV ratings. They've always been incredibly public. Now all of a sudden they are. And so it's a shame you can't go to Media Week and TV Black Box and check these ratings and do your own thing. So it just shows a vulnerability on the part of Foxtel. And again, is that a company you want to get involved with? Anyway, but my answer to that question, has the NBA done enough? I'll give you my full answer in a Patreon exclusive if Canyon and I decide to, or find the time to record another one. It might get a bit explosive. Anywho, that's it. I've really gas-bagged on. I've had a few wines over Easter and really enjoyed it, and this chat was what it was. To put a bow on it, if this is the last telecast, what I'd love to do is, I'm busy in the next couple of days and weeks, I'd love to get Canyon and Body to just record something independently and use this RSS feed to post it. But we'll see if we can get you something. But if this is the last correspondence until next season, thank you very much. Thank you very, very much for listening. We really do appreciate it. But to give you a bit of a button on NBL Pocket Pod and where it's at, yeah, so NBL 24 of the NBL Pocket Pod, NBL 24, NBL PP, as we call it here at the pod, comes to a close, and this season, starting on the 28th of September, this podcast had 9,200 listens for the season. Let's call that 9,000 over how many episodes? I actually don't know. It was about one every 2 weeks, so you people at home can work it out. If you think about late September to now what is early April, an episode every 2 weeks. you'll be able to work out how many there were this season. But on average, it's about 500 listens to each episode. So by that number, we must have done fucking, what, 18 episodes or something like that. To be honest, a podcast, to be saleable, to be, you know, something, you want to be in that sort of 2,500 to 5,000 downloads per episode. So, you know, the pod's not even close. I think that's a symptom of not having the time to do the show that we'd like as often as we'd like, but also that number of avid fans of the NBL just hasn't increased. It does a great job of getting people in stadium and enjoying that in stadium experience, but getting people to wanting to engage more, you know, so consume the game for 2 hours a week, but then wanting to watch a newspaper show or an hour of conversation online or whatever it is. The NBL is still struggling to generate that kind of vibe. AFL does it so well. NRL does it quite well. They just have that thing where they have huge presence to generate conversations Monday through Thursday, and then your games on the weekend. The NBL's still never quite worked it out, never been quite able to attack that. And I have no idea how to do it. It's very difficult to do it when you're not the AFL of a 200-year media history. Getting off that diatribe, unsurprisingly, our first episode of the season was our most listened to. It's had the most time for people to download it, but also start of the year, tensions hype. That episode got 670 listens. Again, nowhere near the mark to make this thing saleable. Big thank you to our guests, Body Nodge. Most recently, he's been a huge supporter of everything, and thank you so much. Trevor Krause, if he's listening, doubt it. Author of Ticketless came on, had that chat. That was a departure from the NBL, but a fun one for me, and I'm hopefully you guys as well. I believe Mark Worthington guested on one of these episodes. We didn't have a huge amount of guests this year. Candy and I didn't reach out. I keep getting emails from the NBL about, you know, here's where you can jump into press conferences. I have no want, whim, or wish to do it. You know, those press conferences are always a bit average. People asking the same old question over and over to write the same old stuff. And God bless them, whatever keeps the turnstile turning and the checks coming in, whatever. A big thank you to our patron and supporters in general, especially the patrons. And if you're thinking about it, to the patrons, I'll say, listen, there will be very little content between now and the start of the year. You'll still be billed every month. If you want to jump off now and jump back on at the start of next season, there is no hard feelings whatsoever. That money, we've never touched a dime of the Patreon money. It's there from the moment we started the account. We might split it 50-50. I mean, we pay a small hosting fee for this stuff and whatever, but we're thinking we might pull it and give it to charity. We're not sure. Give it to someone. Don't know. Do we need it? Kind of. Not really. You know, we'll think about what we want to do with it, but we do thank you for it, and it is in some ways support the show, and yeah, we appreciate it. So thanks very much, everyone. NBL 24 in the books. Go out, live your life, and we'll see you in the future. And actually, before I go anywhere, huge thank you to one half of NBL Pocket Pod, which is Andrew Canyon. A dear friend, an amazing host. You sort of resent doing the pod up until the very moment you first hit the red button, and then when you record it, it's just the best fun, and then you stop the recording, and because of my shitty computer and internet, there's been some problem, and it's a pain in the ass, but it's only as big a pain in the ass until the next time you hit the red button and record again, and you always have such fun doing this. And as I always say to people, if you're thinking about starting a pod with your brother, your sister, your friend, your mother, your father, what, your cousin, whatever, your monkey's uncle, whatever you're thinking of doing, it's a great medium. If you do think about doing it on the NBL, absolutely go for it. Jump in the DMs on Twitter. Happy to send you every piece of everything I can. I'll give you logins to this. You want to cheat on bit.ly cheap URLs if you want to. Happy to help you in any way, shape, or form. Love chatting about it, so do reach out. Thanks, Pocketeers, and see you next season. Ciao.